It was doubtlessly a hot day as Father Abraham set out with his son Isaac up to Mount Moriah. The location is a bit unclear. Some say it was the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and others say it is outside of Hebron, a city that is a dozen miles to the south. And Isaac's age is not certain either. He was old enough to walk alone on this trek without needing to be carried, and big enough to also help carry the wood to the place of sacrifice for the lamb, so he thought. Let's say he's 10 to 12 years of age. To assuage the heat, kafias were worn, the headdress helping to ward off the heat of the blazing sun, and loose-fitting robes to allow air to circulate. And so the donkey was led, assisted by two servants, laden with wood to build the fire for the sacrifice. Now, the occasion for this journey was a dream that Abraham had, a dream, an inner voice, an intuition, a nightmare, in which God supposedly was testing Abraham as to his love for God. "Do you love me?" is implied in the text. "Then take your son Isaac and offer him up as a sacrifice to prove your love." And so on that hot day, they set off, father, son, donkey, servants, wood, rope, knife, to the land of Moriah. Now, whenever I visit my two grandchildren in Brooklyn, New York, invariably, we take our own journey. On Saturday mornings, the three of us set off, my two-year-old grandson in a stroller and the four-year-old holding my hand. And we make our way two blocks down and then across the street to a bakery that makes the best croissants in the eastern United States. Believe me, I've eaten croissants just about everywhere, and I can attest to that. And the dialogue ensues with my four-year-old, as you would imagine. "Dada," she said, "will they have croissants today?" "Oh, yes, yes, they make them every day." "Dada, will they have chocolate croissants today?" "Oh, I don't know if they make them on Saturdays, but we'll ask. Would you like a chocolate croissant?" "Oh, yes," she says. "They are so yummy." "Dada, are we almost there yet?" "Yes, just a little more, and we'll see the awning of the bakery over its door." And as we walk, I am filled with awe and joy at being part of the lives of these two beautiful children, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, one generation removed. But I am also aware of the awesome responsibility I have to keep them safe, to help them grow up. They are in my care. We are off to buy croissants at a bakery. They haven't got a nickel between them. The level of trust in me is so very high. And for these moments, they are my responsibility before God. Now, we don't know all of the dialogue that took place between Father Abraham and Isaac. A 10 to 12-year-old boy must have said a lot in a three-day journey. He might well have said, "Abba, Abba, my feet are tired. Are yours?" And the response, "Oh, we're almost there, my son. Abba, Abba, when we get back home, Mama will have lentil soup and warm bread from the oven, perhaps olives and some dates. I'll be hungry. Will you be hungry too, Abba?" silence. The text does tell us of one of Isaac's questions. "Abba," the young boy asked, "we have the wood for the fire, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" God will provide. And so they journeyed. And you know the story. They arrived at the place for sacrifice. They lit the fire. Abraham binds the boy. Caravaggio, the Baroque painter in 1603, on his massive canvas, captured the scene well. Abraham's left hand is holding Isaac down. A sword is drawn by his right hand, and he looks over his right shoulder. But an angel is there, holding now Abraham's right hand, the one with the sword, as if to say, "Abraham, stay your hand." He stays his hand, and the text said there was a ram in the thicket provided to do the sacrifice. Isaac is untied, the sacrifice was made, and they returned home. Now, there are many interpretations and nuances to this story. Our Jewish sisters and brothers call this story the binding of Isaac because he was never sacrificed. Our Muslim sisters and brothers have a new twist on it. They say the boy was Ishmael, Abraham's son, through Hagar, who was a maidservant to Sarah. And because Abraham proved he was faithful and willing to do the deed, God promised Abraham that he and Sarah would have a son who would be Isaac. Some argue that the story is about the early Hebrew people making a statement that human sacrifice should never be done whatsoever, despite what other groups in the larger context of society may be doing. Others have argued that Abraham was testing God to see how far God would go in the enterprise. In the early church, there were some who saw Isaac as a type of Christ being sacrificed as an offering. Isaac, you see, carrying the wood like Jesus carrying the wooden cross to Golgotha. But many of us who are puzzled by this story, we spiritualize it. God demands our full allegiance, we say, over money or over career, over job, whatever, and then we move on quickly, avoiding the details of the story, but the devil is often in the details. In the New Yorker, this week's issue, there's a cartoon of Isaac tied to the altar and Abraham standing over him, looking up to God. He said, "Must I sacrifice family for career?" Check it out. Richard Dawkins, the avowed atheist who loves to take on all religious faiths, including Christianity, said that this was the first written example of the Nuremberg war crimes trial defense. "I was only doing what I was told." Liturgically, sometimes here at Old South, and more regularly in more liturgical churches, after the reading of the scripture lesson, it is often said, "This is the word of the Lord." And the response from the congregation, of course, is, "Thanks be to God." Not this story, in my opinion. This story reminds me how important community is when we seek to interpret God's call for us or God's will for our lives. For example, in the ordination process, there are a number within our congregation who are seeking ordination and beginning that process. They feel they have a call from God, but we just don't ordain them. We just say, "Oh, you have a feeling, you have a wonderful experience, we'll just ordain you." No, no, no. They have to write a paper describing that call. They have to appear before a discernment committee to test the validity of that call. Even church membership. You feel called to unite with a congregation, say, for example, Old South, Oh, I feel led to be here in a progressive Christian church. Oh, wait, that's great, but wait. You meet with a committee to talk about what it means to belong to this church. Do you pray for and support this congregation? You see who are others there in the connection class as to what their yearnings are for a church. And then you have that call confirmed or denied within you. You see, discerning God's will is most often a faith community endeavor so that our egos and self-righteousness do not get in the way. The community is also helpful in regard to knowing if your actions are pleasing to God. If you are demonstrating your love for God by what you do. This past May, I stood with others from Old South Church by the edge of the Sea of Galilee, by a location where Jesus met with his disciples after they were out fishing. It was the third post-resurrection appearance of Jesus, and the disciples came ashore and they recognized him, and he had breakfast for them in a spot not unlike where so many of us stood in May. Charcoal fish and fresh baked bread. And then Jesus had the dialogue with Peter, you recall, Peter who denied him three times just a few days earlier. And Jesus asked, "Peter, Peter, do you love me more than these? Do you love me, Peter, more than anything else?" Echoes of Abraham's dream of God wanting to know if Abraham loved him above all else. And Peter replied, "Yes, Lord." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. The people that you will meet, the children, the adults, whomever, serve and teach them. Feed my sheep means to love and to nurture them, to teach them, to keep them safe, to protect them, to guide them. That is how you demonstrate your love for God. One further thing for me in this story. The Abraham and Isaac story lacks a woman's voice. It's understandable in the patriarchal context of the day, but let's give Sarah a voice today through our hopefully sanctified imagination. Let's pretend that Sarah greeted them as they came back from the mountain. She's standing at the door of their tent and she calls out, "Oh, beloved husband Abraham and beloved son Isaac, how was your journey?" Silence. Sensing something that may be wrong, she asked, "Well, did you make the sacrifice of the sheep?" Silence. Finally, the story gets told, and Sarah looks at Abraham. "You were going to do what? You were going to sacrifice our son so you can prove something to God? Don't you ever touch my boy again. I don't want him ever to be alone with you again. Oh, tell it, Mother Sarah. Your task as a father is to nurture and love and to protect your children. Tell it, Mother Sarah, and perhaps tell it for our day, too." And to our day, she might well say, "Don't you ever cut food stamps for the needy, many of whom are our children who go to bed hungry at night. Don't you ever fail to vote for background checks for gun ownership that will protect our children. Don't you ever dare balance your budgets on the back of the poor and the marginalized. And don't you ever stop working on ways to abolish the slave trade where young girls are bought, sold, and abused. Oh, tell it, Mother Sarah." In December of 2012, just 10 months ago, the Newtown, Connecticut massacre took place, where 20 children were killed, plus teachers and staff. But the story of the heroic teacher caught my attention as the episode unfolded. As she told the story later, not knowing what might happen, she rushed her class into the bathroom and locked the door. She recounted she did not know if the perpetrator would come and shoot off the lock and kill them all, but she wanted them to feel safe and loved as much as it was possible. And she said she gave them a group hug, and she told them she loved each and every one. And if they were to die, she said that day, she wanted them to hear those words, "I love you, I will protect you as best I can." Oh, my friends, I want teachers and pastors and coaches and neighbors and parishioners like her for my grandchildren and for your children and grandchildren and for your newly baptized children, Brian and Karen. We want people like her. So, Father Abraham, we respect you. Your courage over many decades serves as a model for us. You are in so many ways the father of our faith, but not this story. The teacher with her class locked in the school bathroom, loving them and protecting them, that story demonstrates true love for God above all else. And it's her story, to which we can say, "This is the word of the Lord." Thanks be to God.